On ABC Radio Hobart, it's Breakfast with Rick Goddard.
The latest report into family violence in Tasmania has been released. This is part of the action plan with the government investing considerable resources into tackling family violence. But before you do that, you have to get a picture of what's going on in the community. And the tip of this iceberg, Alina Thomas from Agenda Equality, is pretty shocking. Hello. The figure that really leapt out to me is this claim with the Families Coordination Unit that more than 8,000 at-risk children have been identified and more than 5,000 notifications made to schools so students could be supported. That just seems like a huge number.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's a lot of families who are implicated by family violence. A lot of those families have school-aged children.
And it's something that really we are only starting to look in the home closely to see what's going on. Do you think this is a snapshot of the state of Tasmania, or have we got more to uncover?
Look, I think we're really beginning to understand family violence in Tasmania. But thinking about families and children, in the past, children weren't really considered as being involved in family violence. Thinking historically, and I think that's really important that we keep looking back to where this has come from, when only in the last 10 years there would have been a family violence incident would have involved addressing the parents, the adults in the situation, and the children were not necessarily taken into consideration with the impact on there. So we're having that shift. That's what we're seeing there, Rick, is that shift towards recognising that children, when they're exposed to family violence, when they witness it, that they also become victims of it as well. So we're beginning to understand that. But the long-term implications of that, what we need to do in terms of intervention, early intervention, prevention, we're still really, really just beginning to investigate what we need to do there.
There's a massive increase in reporting, particularly of what they're calling like lower level incidents of family violence. Is there any good news in this report?
Look, I think that we are, that we have seen in that increased investment, and that comes with there is two sides to that. One is that the increased awareness of family violence across the community has led to an increase in reporting. Unfortunately, though, our services are not able to keep up with what that is. That that people coming forward with the more nuanced experiences of family violence is excellent. Like, we need that. That's part of an early intervention response. It's part of us being able to provide services before people get into really high risk situations that are leading to court, police, all those much more expensive responses
and injury and death.
And injury and death impact to children, disability, illness, everything that comes along with that. Yes, that's right. So, but we're still seeing a very big challenge for people who are experiencing ongoing coercive pattern behaviours of power and control. They're still required to provide evidence of that. And that's very difficult to provide evidence of a threat, of intimidation, of harm to pets, of aggressive and threatening driving. So we're still needing to look more into those subtler forms of what is of behaviour that is geared towards being threatening and controlling, but unable to actually get evidence of it. And I think that the police are really experiencing that, of being able to, similarly to Engender, being overwhelmed by the demand for services and sort of picking the easy cases, the easy evidence, we can see what's going on there, follow that. But when it's more subtle, when it's not as obvious, then we're still not responding well.
I was speaking with someone who works training police, and this is this really difficult aspect where policing, as it's attached to justice in the courts, is evidence-driven. And you just can't take someone to court without that in the legal process. It's like there's almost a different kind of policing and support required to address this problem in our families and in our homes, which seems to be so widespread.
That's right, and it really needs to start with a better understanding of what family violence is. And I will say that the only way we can really do that is by talking to people who have experienced that, who are experiencing that, so that we can understand what that is ourselves. Because without that experience, you look at it and you can't see it. It's not immediately obvious. So we need to increase that understanding and not just be thinking of it as violence, as physical violence, as the obvious.
And that kind of controlling behaviour as well is, I mean, so difficult to communicate to people as well, that sense of powerlessness.
Well, there's two folds to that as well, because on one hand, there's no evidence of it. On the other hand, often people who are subjected to those behaviours, their self-confidence is reduced, their self-esteem is reduced, they're made to feel like they're crazy, that they're unbelievably, you know, that there's something wrong with them. So having that experience happen at the same time means that you aren't a good a good witness. You aren't able to provide good evidence. A lot of people end up even colluding with their perpetrators as part of the safety mechanism to keep themselves safer than if they are challenging, if they are actively resisting. So their safety mechanism internally becomes going along with the abuse. Now, you can't present that to the police. There's not something there that you can say, you know, oh, here's all the times that I submitted to this person's anger and intimidation.
On the other side, how are we doing to address the culture in men of this behaviour? Because it is gendered, this behaviour, this violence. It is predominantly men harming women and men harming children. And we've institutionalised that really historically for hundreds of years. So how are we going at changing that culture, and are there the models of male behaviour that we can say, yeah, look, here's a bunch of really nurturing, responsible men who, you know, we can go imitate their behaviour.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point that we could be doing more of, having the positive role models, the real role models of what we would like to be seeing in terms of manliness or masculinity. We're not doing that well. We still look to our traditional leaders, and our, you know, the traditional man is still kind of held up as being the highest status. I do really believe that. But we do have a lot of programs that have emerged to be looking at violence prevention. But there's mentors in violence prevention. Our Watch have a couple of programs, and they can be pitched towards communities to where they might be ready for different engagement with that. And so I really would encourage people to investigate that and choose something that works for their workplaces or their sporting association, and really come on involved, because at the moment, without that, people investigating it and engaging it, we come up to against that resistance, and that's not helpful.
And it's just, the onus is always on the women to have the evidence, to do the thing, to go to the court, to do the stuff. It would be great, an early intervention, to go, wow, well, there's a man here with a problem, so let's sort that out.
That's right. And be starting that really early about thinking about, instead of being that man, why not be this man?
What needs to happen next is, you look at this report, what's the first cab off the rank?
Look, I'm very passionate about two particular things in relation to this report. One is to be positioning people with lived experience as experts. I want to see people with lived experience consulted on policy and system development. The other thing that I think is absolutely crucial is a greater investment, a greater recognition of the value of local specialist services. This is a really complicated problem. It exists, it's across Tasmania. Tasmania is utterly unique. We can't be relying on national organisations, on mainland organisations to be coming here and solving these problems across our regions and across our really distinct populations. It needs local services, and it needs specialist services.